I'm Commander Shepard, and This Week in Geek is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame death party!
Welcome to This Week in Geek. I am your host, Alex, the producer, and I'm joined with nobody. Birdman is under the weather. He's got laryngitis and hasn't been able to talk, so that's why he's not here to talk about anything. And Mr. Christopher obviously couldn't schedule around his work. It's been a long stint he's been doing right now. And we were going to try to get all together, you know, when we were all healthy and well, but we've also happened to have the unprecedented crazy wind and ice storm that basically took out the entire weekend when we could all get together to do this. So I'm going to take over the reins just for this week, and we're going to probably be back together, knock on wood, for the weekend for the next show. But in the meantime, what do we have this week for you? We've got about three reviews. We've got Trials Rising from Ubisoft. We also have Kino's Journey, which is a standard def Blu-ray release from ADV Films, of all people. And we also have The Friends of Ringo Ishikawa, which Mr. Christopher reviewed. That's a PC beat-em-up brawler game. And we're going to have an interview from GenreCon that we attended a couple weeks ago before all the snowstorm and everything hit. So we've got a few more of those interviews to come out and promote it. It was just a very, very fun local convention that I think is going to grow and get bigger and bigger. So we're going to throw that in here as well. And we also have the news, obviously, the weird news, Satan's Pantry, the whole shebang. So without further ado, let's get right into it.
This is a fair request, and I promise I will not judge any person only as a teenager, and that this is no more right than saying all teenagers are drunken dope addicts or glue sniffers.
ADV Films lives? Question mark, question mark. Everybody that was an anime fan will remember ADV Films being the biggest of those release groups based out of Texas that fell apart, roughly about 10 years ago now? And out of the ashes came Section 23, and then all their subsidiaries made in Japan, Sentai Filmworks, and so on and so forth. And it looks like they're resurrecting that brand and to release a few different things here and there. This one in particular is Kino's Journey, which is about a character that rides around on a motorcycle. And it's sort of... it's a very odd anime. I'm not going to go into details of the story because, you know, that would spoil everything. Plus, this is a sort of a re-release. This has been out before in the past. It's just the first time on Blu-ray. So, what do you get with the Blu-ray release of this? Well, you get all 13 episodes. They're in standard definition on one Blu-ray disc, so they're higher quality than the previous release from ADV years ago. But you do get the surround soundtrack that they had produced before in English. So you get Japanese stereo audio, and you get English DTS HD master audio and surround. And from what I can tell, I hadn't seen the original release, but I was sort of looking around. It does, like, in looking at the audio waveforms on my my computer that I'm watching this on, it's a clean track, and it seems to be remastered as best can be. It is in widescreen, so this is going to be the best that the show has ever looked, at least in North America for sure. As far as special features go, there's a clean opening and closing animations and some production sketches, so it's not completely bare bones. And then there's, of course, the standard requisite trailers for other releases from them, which is really cool. So I'll give you the rundown from the back of the box, because this is one that I think you really want to see, and I don't want to spoil anything for you, because I really, really enjoyed this this production. So it's 13 episodes, and it's 3 days, 2 nights. That's how much time Kino and Hermes allot to each new place they visit before drifting off again, crossing a mysterious land filled with mystical sights and strange customs. Kino's an enigmatic loner, skilled with weapons and always anticipating what might lie around the next hill or bend of the river. Hermes is Kino's friend, companion, and motorcycle. So I might have lost some of you there. Gifted with the ability to think and speak, seldom as bold as Kino, but always there when speed is required. What is their goal? Their ultimate destination? Life itself. Like life itself, it's a mystery that only one can solve by taking the journey themselves. All Kino and Hermes know is that adventure, danger, and new wonders lie at the horizon, waiting to be uncovered with each passing stop. So it is just, it's a strange sort of fantasy, pseudo, I guess takes place somewhere in like the 30s or 40s is sort of the aesthetic you get from the way the motorcycles look, maybe late 40s or so. But again, it's sort of a fantasy world. It's very interesting, and it's definitely worth the, you know, $30 to $40 or so it's going to cost to pick it up. The fact that it's back in print, it is kind of nice seeing the old ADV Films logo at the bottom of the box. And the fact that it's basically probably the best quality you're going to get, because I don't see them getting a full remastering in Japan, maybe eventually in full HD. But until then, this is the best quality copy you're going to be able to see. And it does look, I was looking up reviews of the previous releases from this. This looks a lot cleaner than what had been out previously. So if you're a fan of it previously and owned it, it's worth picking up and getting a second copy or getting a new copy of it this way. If not, it's a good entry point. 13 episodes, it'll run 325 minutes or so, all on one disc. So that is Kino's Journey from ADV Films.
Dungeons & Dragons takes you to far-off worlds full of great adventure, terrifying creatures, and wondrous landscapes. So why are you still using the dice from that old board game you're missing half the pieces to? Head over to LibrisArcana.com and get your dice collection started. For just $7.97 a month and free shipping in Canada, LibrisArcana.com will send you a premium 7-dice set, plus 3 randomly selected bonus dice every month. There's a ton of variety, so you'll have dice to suit any adventure you and your party can come up with, without looking through old board games for parts. So spruce up your next adventure and get your dice collection started today at LibrisArcana.com.
News on the march!
It's news time, and we've got a bunch for you. It's going to be a little more rapid fire than normal since I don't have anybody to bounce off of. But blame the weather, blame sickness, blame anything but me. So, first up, we'll just do a little quick one here. Netflix's Punisher and Jessica Jones are canceled. I don't think anybody was really surprised by that. We were hoping that, if anything, the Punisher would probably be the one that they could keep, but it's obvious that Disney is consolidating all their properties now that they have their Disney Plus service. They also have stuff on Hulu and other channels. It's just, it makes more sense for them to consolidate everything. Plus, Netflix, they've been making some moves, it looks like, to get some DC content. Now, the DC Universe subscription service is working well for them, but I've noticed a lot of live-action stuff like The Flash and that sort of stuff. They're sort of starting to consolidate a lot of their programming and the CW programming on Netflix. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's the way that they're moving. Or in my mind, you know, I'm speculating they might want to work with Sony now that Crackle is no more in Canada. I don't know how it's doing in the States, but Sony's got that big deal with Valiant Comics now, and they're producing a bunch of movies, some of them starring like Vin Diesel and other people. It wouldn't surprise me if they want to use the Valiant universe in some way on a streaming platform, and that would be something they could use there because it would be something nobody else has, and they're pretty good comics. So who knows? Either way, both of the shows are canceled. It's no big surprise. I still haven't caught up. I didn't watch the last season of Daredevil yet. I haven't seen the latest seasons of any of them. I don't know. I just wasn't intrigued to do so. I'll probably go back now and watch the rest. I know Birdman really liked Jessica Jones. I hated it myself. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through that one. Probably. I'll try. But I really, really, really liked The Punisher. So that's too bad. But I'll definitely watch it and catch up. So that... I'm... a little disappointed because it's sort of willy-nilly. It's hard to tell with them if they're going to keep things or not. This is one of those cases where it was probably that they were going to cancel it anyway. But regardless, it was, you know, it was sort of writing was on the wall. So that's that. We're going to move on to the next story here. We've got lightsaber dueling is now recognized as a competitive sport in France. No, really. So this is on Time Magazine, like time.com. So this is a legit story. It's now easier than ever in France to act out Star Wars fantasies because its fencing federation has borrowed from a galaxy far, far away and officially recognized lightsaber dueling as a competitive sport, granting the iconic weapon from George Lucas's saga the same status as the foil, EP, and saber in traditional blades used in the Olympics. Okay, so... there's a longer article here where they're just interviewing a bunch of people. It's basically a recognized sport. So, sure. I mean, could it hit the Olympics eventually? That would be hilarious, but also, would it detract from the Olympics? I don't know at this point. But that's pretty cool. If they do that, then, I mean, Canada is basically, like... supposed to be half French, but it's not. It's like 10% French. But anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if we start adopting it and then it makes its way down to the States. Who knows? That's you could categorize this as one of our weird stories, but I don't think it's weird because it's a national sport now, I guess. So I mean, you can give us your thoughts on this. You know, hit us up on Facebook or on Twitter or comment on the post on our website here. But I think it's really cool. I mean, the question arises, is it going to allow the dual-sided one, like the double blade swords, like the Darth Maul one? Because then at that point, it's just basically, I mean, we've basically become like the American Gladiators, right? So... sure. In another story, Trump signs directive to create a military space force. So basically, he's creating Starship Troopers or I forget the Marines from Space Above and Beyond. It's basically that. President Donald Trump signed the Space Policy Directive 4. On February 19th, ordering the Pentagon to establish a Space Force as the sixth branch of the United States military to go along with the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and Coast Guard. But the Space Force still has a big hoop to jump through. Congress must approve the creation of any new military branch. The main goal of the Space Force is to secure and extend American dominance in the space domain. Are you serious? Okay. Trump and the other White House officials have said such reasoning has drawn opposition from various quarters. Yeah, no shit, because it sounds ridiculous and it's crazy. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me that this is the president that does this. But what does surprise me is that there wasn't already some sort of secret faction that was something they were working on since the 80s. Like, you would have figured that they had something already in place for this, but I guess not. So, yeah. Next story we've got here is Chris Hemsworth to play Hulk Hogan in biopic directed by Todd Phillips. Brother. I mean, I would think he doesn't really look like him, but I'm looking at his face and they've got him next to, like, Hulk Hogan circa 1990 when he wasn't all puffy and bloated anymore from all the roids, when he was just a normal amount of roids. and it would work. He's going to portray Hulk in a biopic that reunites director and writer of DC Comics, The Joker. Okay, you know what? I have read a little more into this, and it's going to be based on his time starting out as a wrestler, where he was like a nobody, and then going to the AWA, and then probably leading into the beginnings of Hulkamania. I don't know. It's not. They already said it's not going to go into the Gawker stuff. It's not going to be in the last 10 years recent stuff. They might flash forward and show a little bit of stuff, you know. They probably might go into the WCW stuff. Who knows? And then they might maybe TNA. Who knows? But it looks like it's going to be focusing mostly on him in the early 70s before he became a professional wrestler, and then into the late 70s when he became one, and then the biggest wrestler in the world in the 80s. That's pretty cool. It's looking like it's going to be on Netflix. It might be like one of those things where it goes to theatrical release limited, and then at the same time goes to Netflix. I know that there was a Vince McMahon one that was in the works for a while, and it's been shopped around, and people haven't been able to develop it. It's been in development hell simply because it was so wacky out there, and it seemed detached from reality, which is possible, or it could also be true. But this sounds like it could be pretty good. So, I mean, I'm down for it. Like, wrestling is all the rage now. It's bigger now than it's been probably in 20, 25 years. So, Chris Hemsworth to play Hulk, sure, but only if he gets to wear, like, the Thor outfit somehow. Or so, I don't know, that'd be cool, Thor Hulk. Anyway, yeah, I'm all for that. I want to see more coming out of that. That sounds like something that I think a lot of people will watch, and it's a good way to see into, like, 'cause Hulk Hogan is one of those guys where he's from that era where you basically protected the business and you don't really talk about your past and all that. So hopefully this is going to be something that's like more close to a real biopic where it shows his real origins and not something that's sort of fabricated or exaggerated. But who knows? Either way, it's probably going to be entertaining. Now, we also have another story coming out from another streaming network. We've got Amazon has reportedly locked the Lord of the Rings writers in an office with a guard and fingerprint scanner. That Amazon has a lot riding on the secretive $250 million deal with the Lord of the Rings estate. Lord of the Rings fans don't know an awful lot. Basically, there's a long article about this. But basically, there was that multi-billion-dollar deal they made to make television. Like, that's the production on it. So they're taking the writers, locking them in a room. They can't share the information on the stories, which is funny because you already know the stories of it, unless they're deviating dramatically and has nothing to do with the Lord of the Rings. Because, like, that's the only way that would... Because everybody knows the stories. So it's got to be something on the tertiary or something completely different. But I have heard of this happening before where the writer's room gets locked. I haven't heard about a writer's room being under fingerprint scanner so only certain people can get in and out, and having a guard posted at the door so that they can't leak things out, things can't come in, and they have to sit there and keep writing and working. I think it's because they have a lot of money writing on this and they don't want anything to leak, and they also want the work to progress as fast as possible. That being said, it doesn't look necessarily good for Amazon doing this, but the fact that it leaked out, it's pretty funny. I'm hoping this is good. Like, this is the possibility to be the highest production budget and best looking TV show of all time, you know, rivaling movies, maybe even looking better than movies, possibly. It all depends on how much money. If they're pumping $1 billion into this, there's a possibility that this would look... I know that it's more money than the actual films cost to make at the time, But even with inflation and that, it's because this is going to be spread over multiple episodes. So there's a lot more to shoot. So it has a possibility of looking like a triple A, you know, high-end summer blockbuster, which would be pretty cool. I don't know if it's necessary because Game of Thrones at like less than half that budget already looks better. Like, I think Game of Thrones is like between 50 and 100 million a year is what they were spending on it. So maybe, yeah, something like that. So they're like, it doesn't surprise me that they want to really one up the Game of Thrones show, and Game of Thrones will be over before this comes out. So they're hoping to catch that, I guess, the drift of that, instead of like, they're like, hey, you liked Game of Thrones? Well, Lord of the Rings is here, and we're even better. So it doesn't surprise me that they did this. It does surprise me that they had to use a fingerprint scanner and have an armed guard. So, yeah, Amazon, sure, Prime. I don't know if it's a good look for you. We also have another story with Reggie from Nintendo has retired. This is news that came out a few days ago that Doug Bowser, great name, is taking over as the new Nintendo of America president. Now, Reggie, he's probably the most well-known Nintendo official outside of Japan. I mean, anywhere like within the company, which makes sense. I mean, he's a big marketing guy. Like, people don't realize that Nintendo is not, like, Nintendo of America really has no power. They did back in the 80s and early 90s when they had to dictate some of the stuff, like when Nintendo was trying to launch their system and they needed the American support. But the American Nintendo counterpart is more of a marketing division. They very rarely produce or do anything themselves or have any direction. Reggie was basically there to shape the image of Nintendo in North America, because the image of Nintendo in North America is very different than Japan. So being the CEO of Nintendo of America, or the the chief officer, it's not, or president, it's not that you're the business guy in the sense of you're not like the bean counter, you're not the guy in the accounting department, you're not the person that is the financial officer or the person that makes the best business decisions as a whole, because he really has no power that way. His power is basically he's the chief branding officer. He's the guy that's in charge of all the marketing for, the States, Canada, and Mexico. And by and large, like, what the weird thing about that is, Nintendo makes most of their money in this region, yet he would have the least amount of power. It's weird. So him stepping down won't change a lot. It'll just change the way things look to us. If the Bowser guy is smart, he's going to keep the marketing campaign the way that the Nintendo's done it for a while in North America, and just sort of, maybe inject some of his own flavor into things. So Reggie, it sounds like they're saying he's leaving the gaming industry. Who knows? Personally, I do think that Reggie would, if he wanted to stay in the gaming industry, where he could really do some good is he could take over GameStop from floundering, because GameStop is just falling apart, and they've had, they might be going bankrupt and all this. He would be somebody who could actually save it and actually do good for them. It would actually be pretty cool if he went in and really turned that business around, or for that sense, kick Activision Blizzard, kick out your CEO, hire him, or EA, kick out your CEO, hire him. He can actually, take what he's done for Nintendo and grown them to be such this huge powerhouse in the North America, especially in marketing, and he could fix a lot of the PR disasters that those companies have had. As far as Bethesda, they'd have no chance of getting him. They're not big enough. They also, I don't think anybody wants to touch them. I think Bethesda's pretty much done, but that's my personal opinion. I don't think you can fix that. You can't put a new coat of paint on that garbage. But as far as EA or one of the other big companies like Activision, he could actually really turn them around, or GameStop itself. It would be really cool because he would have a good way of marketing it, and he already has the face that people know. So that would be something cool. Or he might just retire. I mean, he's probably made a very, very good living for himself working at Nintendo. So it's yet to be seen what's going to happen. I'm assuming that the Doug Bowser guy is going to do, maybe he might be introduced at that Nintendo Direct that they're doing in the next day or so. I think it's uh, I think, depending on when I release this, because we're recording this early in the week, it might be today that I release it on the same day. If that's the case, then the next day we're going to see a Nintendo Direct. And if not, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets introduced at the Nintendo Direct and then talks like for the Pokemon one and talks about his transition. If they're really smart, they'll have Reggie come out, say goodbye and thank you to the fans because people liked him. And then, you know, he'll shake Doug Bowser's hand, introduce him, and Doug Bowser will take over. And Reggie can, you know, go off into the sunset because he's really been the biggest celebrity in Nintendo for the last, 15 years? So that's, which is pretty damn good. So, you know, hopefully everything is a smooth transition and we don't have any weird, you know, gaps in information or a rocky start to anything. So I guess goodbye, Reggie, and we'll see how Doug Bowser does in his first videos. And let's see here. We've got, what other stories here? Oh, yes, that's right. Alfonso Ribeiro was denied copyright of Carlton dance used in Fortnite. This is a quick one. It's pretty easy to figure out. You can't copyright a dance that a dance is inherently a dance. It's not like they're infringing on his character. They didn't. Basically, it was thrown out of court because he didn't. His character didn't get used in that nothing looks like him. It's just the moves. You can't copyright the moves of the dance. So he was trying to sue them because they put his Carlton dance in the game and he thought that, hey, I should be getting some money out of this if you're using my dance. Well, that doesn't really fly. You think the person that invented the chicken dance gets money every time somebody does the chicken dance, really? Or like the Monster Mash? That's not how it works. If you use the song, yes. But if they used, in this case, if they used the song that he was using, well, it's Tom Jones. So he wouldn't get any money for that anyway. So they would only be able to sue if they were using, let's say, his image of his face or his exact body type and likeness. Then it would be like, okay, but even then, it's a parody. So I don't think it was ever going to go anywhere. He might have thought it would. He might have just done it for publicity's sake, or maybe his lawyer just did it for publicity's sake. But yeah, that was going to get completely thrown out. It didn't make any sense to me that he was going to sue them and actually win. Yeah, that was completely ridiculous. So that's going to do it for the news. We've got a bunch of weird news stories coming up. And in between here, I'm going to throw in one of our reviews or maybe one of the interviews. I'm not completely sure yet because all the elements are being sent to me because of Mr. Christopher not being available and the windstorms and the snowstorms and Dodd having laryngitis. Can you believe that man actually had, it's happened. He can't speak. It's crazy. This might be the first time in history that Birdman can't speak. Anyway, I'll be back with something next.
And now it's time for another special feature.
Heckle.
I am here with Asad Qureshi from Genesis Battle of Champions. I interviewed him last year about his new card game, and in the last year he's seen a lot of growth. How big has it gotten in the last 12 months?
So, just proportionally, like a year ago, we were just at our alpha product, and we were still trying to figure out when we were going to finish that set. And we had no plans. We didn't think it would take us a year, but in a year, we not only finished alpha, but we launched beta. We've created our first auxiliary product, so we got the game mats out. And now we're in 5 stores and slowly growing into a 6th and 7th, so it's been growing quite a bit.
I've noticed a lot of activity in local game stores. There's a lot of people on Facebook that are playing the game. They're talking about the game. I'm seeing activity. What's been the most exciting part about the last year?
I think that the community is starting to get a mind of its own. It's not just me driving everything. We have other people who are starting tournaments, starting leagues even, getting the players to engage outside of events hosted by Haunted Castle Gaming or by the Genesis like core team. It's the community who loves the game, and with their passion, they're driving it to the next level.
So where are the community really gathering? What's the main place where people that are interested in this game can really get together and talk about it, get and learn about it? What are these places that people can get to know this game?
So Heads or Tails in Brantford is probably one of our strongest partners right now, and they're doing a great job teaching people how to play the game, but also getting them started, giving them singles, giving them a way to really engage with it, and then coming out and playing regularly. So they host events 2 days a week. The other place is here in Guelph at the Round Table. Dai has started to do, I think at the end of this month, on the 20th, she's going to do a Learn How to Play event. And then we're going to start running tournaments on a monthly basis here in Guelph. So most of these cities around Cambridge, Kitchener, there's at least a store there. Yeah.
Awesome. Is there an online community, an online presence so far, or is it something that's mostly just a face-to-face sort of game?
So right now, all the gameplay is face-to-face, but at the same time, we're getting people... We are selling the product on Amazon, so you can get it there. And we've had people in BC, in Ottawa, across Canada buying the product. So there are little pockets of communities kind of growing, which is really cool. And on top of that, there's an online shop, Dino Boards, which actually started pricing out singles. So the single community is out there. It's not just the sealed products anymore.
It really feels like a milestone of making it as a card game. You know, when people are buying the singles, people are trying to focus on making a deck. It's kind of, you've entered that market. Now you're part of that scene. So that's really great. What's next for Genesis? What's in the near future and what's in the far future? What kind of ideas do you have brewing right now?
So come September, we're going to be releasing our next set. And this is going to be a really big thing for us because we're moving out of alpha and beta. We're moving into our first real set tied to a storyline, tied to a really cohesive art style. So pay attention to that. It's called Welcome to JLara, and there'll be a lot of advertising for that. Besides that, we're looking into getting into new stores, getting in across Canada. So hopefully working with a distributor or distributing ourselves, whatever's necessary, because we know it's not going to be a third party that stops us from doing what we need to do. We're going to do whatever it takes to get this game across Canada and across North America. It's going to happen.
So like you said, you can pick it up on Amazon. There's local game stores. Our local game stores are carrying this game, this product right now here in the Guelph and surrounding area, correct?
Yeah, you can always visit our website and there's a buy now section. And in there, I'll list all our stores that are carrying the game. And our events page will tell you where you can go to come to check out an open house, which is a completely free event for the players to come out to, learn how to play a game, walk away with your first starter deck, and have the chance to win more prizes.
Awesome. Anything else you want to add today?
I want to just thank the community and everyone who supported us to this point, and check us out on GenesisBattleOfTheChampions.com. Join us on Facebook and Instagram. We're there at GenesisBOC. So follow us and stay in touch.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye then.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Weird news time, and we've got four stories here for you. Pretty simple. I'll go through them pretty straightforward, but weird. KFC has enlisted RoboCop as their new colonel, and yes, this is not a joke. So I've seen a few of these clips now. KFC is on a roll when it comes to their... having all these different celebrities and people be the colonel. RoboCop and having them reenact scenes from RoboCop as if it was a KFC commercial is absolutely fantastic. So this is just a quick one you're going to have to check out. Just go on YouTube, type in KFC RoboCop. There's probably about five or six different clips, and they're all fantastic. I ended up going down a rabbit hole and finding more clips. There was a weird cat tree one that's not related to RoboCop, but like, you want to talk weird, look up all the RoboCop at all the KFC recent commercials of the last year or so that are online only, the ones that don't hit TV, they're just absolutely ridiculous. From the ones with WWE to RoboCop to Cat Tree Man to I don't quite understand. And anyway, it's worth checking out. It's just definitely weird and crazy. Moving along, we've got a Great Dane gives birth to never-ending puppies, it says in quotes. Basically 19 of them. So this is from ABC News. The average Great Dane litter is about 8 to 9 puppies, and this one did 19. So doctors at the Kingman Animal Hospital in Kingman, Arizona, helped Cleo deliver 19 puppies by cesarean section. That's a lot of large puppies. Holy crap. So, I mean, I guess it might be a record holder. That's what they're saying. They're looking into seeing if it's a record holder or not. But that, like, could you imagine, I know it's puppies, but imagine, like, you're told you think you're having twins, and then you go for a C-section, and, like, 7 kids come out. You're like, what? It's one of those sorts of deals. We also have a story here, which is hundreds of live fish rain from the sky during megastorm in Malta. So, it says residents of Malta enjoyed a free pick of seafood as they battled gale force winds and high waves during storm. A huge storm in Malta caused such strong winds that it rained fish across the island. Gale force gusts and heavy downpours coupled with the rough seas caused the unusual phenomenon. The devastating storm had caused major damage and disruptions to roads along the area, and the government issued warnings of high threat to life and property. The gusts sent piles of sea bream flying over the sea, landed on the roads, and it's just basically, there's pictures, it's a sea of fish, and people ran outside with nets, like fishing nets that you see, and just picking them up and just catching them in their arms. Free food. Free food in a terrifying storm. That being said, like, you know, all I'm thinking of is, like, somebody says, yeah, when pigs fly or you when fish fly. Well, yeah, it does happen when this sort of happens. Like, I remember, what was it? People had tornadoes where, like, you know, like Sharknado, that's that ridiculous movie series, is based on something that can really happen. Not necessarily with sharks, but, like, where fish get sucked up into funnels and they fly out all over the road. So it's that sort of deal. So that in itself is a weird story. We've got one more here that's, again, this is going to be a quick weird news. We've got a humpback whale discovered in Amazon, in the Amazon jungle, in wildlife mystery that has scientists baffled. So this is from Newsweek. I'm going to read you the article here. Biologists are trying to solve the mystery of how the carcass of a humpback whale ended up in the Amazon jungle. You know, that's a fairly large animal, and it's kind of surprising that it's there. So we've got here, the mammal was found in the Marajo Island of Brazil, about 50 feet from the ocean shore. 50 feet, okay. A team of biologists from the Bico, I'm going to butcher these names, Bico Daguala Institute, posted pictures of the whale reported to be a 12-month-old calf onto the social media. In a statement posted on Facebook along with the photo, the Institute explained that the whale was not an adult animal and not as big as it looks in the images. Okay, well, still, regardless, it's still a whale. The Maritime Herald suggests that the whale might have died after ingesting plastics from the ocean before being swept along the waves onto the jungle shore. Renata Emin, a marine biologist, a marine specialist, told Brazil News that we're not sure how it landed here, but we're guessing that the creature was floating close to the shore on the tide. Along with this astonishing feat, we are baffled with what humpback whale was doing on the north coast of Brazil during February, because it's a very unusual occurrence. The Municipal Secretariat of Health, Sanitation, and Environment, wow, that's a long title, is investigating why the mammal was so far away from its natural habitat this time of year. It's very strange. So basically, they're doing an autopsy to determine the cause of death, and it's expected to take about 10 days or so. It's not the first time that a whale has been found in the Amazon rainforest. In 2007, a mink whale was measuring more than 18 feet, was found stranded on a sandbar in the Amazon River in the city of Santarém, about 1,000 miles from the Atlantic Ocean. The whale eventually managed to free itself and make it back to safely. Basically, the weird thing here is this is not a part of the world where these whales are usually found to begin with. So I'm wondering if it has something to do with like the tides or just the changing weather, because, you know, I've been talking the last couple of weeks, our weather has just been absolutely nuts with, you know, minus 40 with freezing and then freezing rain the next day. We're talking it's like 3 degrees out with freezing rain. We just had a windstorm that lasted 2 days. It was supposed to last half a day, but it was 2 days of like 80 mile an hour winds in the winter with snow. So it was blowing everywhere. So every surface is now ice, with the exception of wherever the snow powder landed on. So it's just absolutely ridiculous. Things are changing so fast that these weird occurrences are probably going to happen more than you'd expect. But generally, you don't know or hear about a humpback whale being in the Amazon. So I don't know. Strange enough to me. So that's going to do it for the news and the weird news this week. We're going to be back right after this.
Do you have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Hold that thought. It's crapper time.
The other day, Ubisoft sent over a copy of Trials Rising, the brand new Trials game, and it's been about 4 or 5 years since I had a chance to play one of the Trials games, and I remember liking it, and I remember it thinking that it was a little old, I guess, past gen. It never really looked that impressive. It was just sort of a fun physics sort of game where you had to, you know, do stunts and try to make it through a track while not crashing. Very similar to a title that I think a free-to-play title that we had played back in high school, what, 10, 15 years ago. It was more polished than that, obviously. But this new Trials game with Trials Rising, it's completely different as far as it's on a different level when it comes to visuals. I wouldn't have expected a game like this to be 20 gigs or more in download and install on the PS4, but it is. And that's because the graphics are very intensive. There's a lot going on in the backgrounds. There's like, for instance, earlier on in the game, you play a level where you're going through a Hollywood movie shoot, and when you go through the Hollywood movie shoot, you end up going through like a space level that sort of like aliens shooting through it. Everything is very, very, very in depth and detailed, and there's just tons of particle effects and lighting. It just has a very cinematic and fantastic look. So it's a huge step up in my mind for the Trials series. Now, it controls basically the same as any previous Trials game, only maybe a little more refined. They've done some fine tuning to the controls so that it balances a little better. You never feel like you're screwing up because the game was coded improperly. If you do mess up and have to start over, it's because you haven't learned the track yet, and you have to just sort of figure out the best way to get through it. There are loot boxes in here, so, you know, anybody that's been freaking out about loot boxes, they are a part of this game, but they are not something that you get, like, pay to win or anything. When you level up a character by doing good on tracks, you actually get loot boxes on their own, so you don't have to buy them. And what they do is they're just cosmetic. They like our stickers and decals, and as well as like different clothing pieces and pieces for your bikes. So it's not anything that's going to, you know, impact the way you play. So if you choose to, you can pay some money and deck out your character with some pretty cool threads and stuff, or you could just play through, and as you play levels, like basically every few levels you end up leveling up, and you can then, you know, open up a box and get some random stuff. So I got some pretty cool rims, and I had different helmets and that. So that, again, I'm not angry about that. It's just, if somebody is like, oh, I don't want loot boxes, they are in the game, but again, they're not essential or anything like as far as pay to win. You don't use it to like unlock abilities to like go to the next level or anything. It's all cosmetic, which is perfectly fine, and that's how they should be. Now, as far as audio is concerned, they have a pretty good mix of different licensed music, like a different rock and genres that just sort of bring you into the game, and it feels like you're at a real event watching these people race their bikes. Standouts, as far as I can see, was there was a Motorhead song in there that was pretty good and that really mixed well. I've heard it goes in a loop a little bit. Sometimes it doesn't play the different songs that I would like. I've expected to be completely random, but it seems like it plays a couple songs more often than others. That might be songs that were probably licensed for the specific use to be used a lot more, maybe in the marketing of the game. Who knows? That's just me speculating. But it does have a pretty good mix of different rock tracks and punk and alternative and just with the background ambient noise. It's pretty good. It's mixed very well. Visually, like I said, it's one of the best looking games of its type out there for sure. The stunt bike racing, the controls are very clean and tight. I have no problems with that at all. I would say, you know, it's one of those games where it's not, you know, it's not a game that can sustain a full $80 Canadian price tag, which they know because it's retailing for about 35 Americans. So you're looking at, depending on where you get it, about 49-ish Canadian, which is actually probably the right price point for it. There is a lot of content in there. It's just, it's something that I think is going to do best at that price point. So it's actually a pretty good price, and I would say pick it up. So if you're a fan of the Trials games, it's a no-brainer. Pick it up and you'll love it. If you're somebody who's new to the Trials series, is this something you should jump into? I would say yes. It's actually a good point to like start in the series. And I think you're going to be thoroughly enjoying yourself because, you know, I was crashing over and over again because I wasn't the best at the beginning. But you can feel the progression as you go and get better and better at leaning left and right and doing tricks and stuff to make sure you traverse the weird and wacky levels that always end in your doom at the very end anyway. So that's Ubisoft's Trials Rising. I think you're going to enjoy it.
Those magnificent bastards!
Color me kooky, but something very odd is going on around here.
You're not allowed to talk anymore.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig! It's inedible!
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we decide to try things that are weird, strange, unusual, and occasionally tasty here on the show. And, as always, we have Alex check out the local Asian market to find out what looks weird today. And, Alex, what do you have for us today?
I have a Pikachu drink!
Ooh, I'm actually
made
kind
with
of excited.
Real Pikachu.
There's a, yeah, it's Pikachu. Just grab his balls and squeeze till something comes out.
Or it's ground up Pikachu, which is even more disturbing.
Soylent Pikachu. It's made from
I thought
Pikachu.
It was kind of funny that right next to it they were selling hats made out of yellow fur. So I saw there's an entire line of Pokemon flavored pops.
Well, we'll have to try them all.
Yeah, they're a little pricey. They're a little over $2 per can. So it was I'm going to pick up one this time thing.
Now, is it like one flavor for each of the original 150, or is it all like 680, whatever the fuck?
Can you imagine that?
It's like Squirtle, Bulbasaur, all the starting Pokemons for red, blue, yellow, and I think that's about it.
I think you sent me a picture of it. I'm actually going to see if I can find it.
But the other flavors were, there were some weird ones, like some sort of root.
Okay.
Yeah, there's Squirtle, Bulbasaur, and Pikachu that I can see.
And there was one that was just a plain Pokedex. And
that's cool.
The Pokedex is the soda water.
Oh.
The plain, because it's nothing. Okay. It's a nothing. It's not a Pokemon.
Okay, well, I could have just done, like, Pidgey.
But I figured the brand is
here's
Ocean.
Pidgey, fuck you.
Rattata flavor.
The brand is Ocean Bomb, and these are, like, 100% licensed Pokemon. Like
that's legit.
What does it say on here? Natural deep sea sparkling water, so it's got to taste like shit, right?
Ooh, that's had something that
same amount
like
of calories you find in any regular pop. No, it has fructose. Oh, wait.
Oh, it's Snorlax and Jigglypuff.
No high fructose corn syrup because they don't use that. So it's normal fructose, as in normal fruit sugar.
Interesting.
This is cider flavored. So I'm assuming that would mean apple cider, but it doesn't say apple. So it could be any kind of cider.
Now, what does it say here? Like, it has the Pokemon Company licensed for Asia only. Well, TNT's close enough. Now, it has 1997 on the side of it, but that's the year Pokemon came out. So,
let's hope it hasn't been around since the 90s.
Well, if we open it up and it's a solid, then we'll know.
Yeah, Ocean Bomb and Pokemon Cider. I'm trying to see if they have a batch date on it or something.
Look at the bottom, usually.
Yeah, 2017.
That can still be good.
Oh, good till December 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so
2 years. That's actually... drink. That's longer than American Pops. Oh...
Keep in mind, best before day doesn't mean expiry.
No, but also, high fructose corn syrup has a shorter shelf life. So does aspartame and the sucralose that we use for diet. So you might find a can of one that has that, was it xylitol? It's the one that tastes the most like sugar, but it's the most expensive. If you go to one of the health food stores, okay. They can have them on the shelf for like 3 years.
Jeez.
Yeah. So anyway, let's crack it open. I got some cups to spread it around. Oh, interesting. The tab on the top, you know, the mouthpiece?
Yeah.
Is the original Pepsi thin ones.
Oh.
They don't make that here anymore.
No, they don't.
Everything here went to the...
Thicker tabs.
Well, not just thicker, but remember for a while they were all the Mountain Dew wide mouth? When they advertised the wide mouth?
Yeah.
So, let's open this guy up.
No explosions.
No explosions. The can is thicker than normal. It is see-through.
It's clear. That's probably for the best.
Okay.
Yellow would have been appropriate, though.
That would have been cool if it was like that mellow yellow flavor or look. Hell, if it tastes like mellow yellow, I'd be really impressed.
So, here we go. Handing it out to you.
Thank you, sir.
What do you smell?
Smell, oh, good.
Smells like...
It smells can't place fruity. It smells like...
Yeah, it's fruity.
When you read something, it just says fruit flavor.
Like citrus.
All right, let's give it a chug.
It's not bad.
You know what it tastes like? Fruit roll-up that's been melted.
I'm tasting a bit of an energy drink, sort of.
Not as strong. The bubbles are way less carb. The carbonation is finer.
An energy drink that has had water melted into it.
There's also more. There's more bubbles than normal, but they dissolve faster.
Yeah, I mean it's weird. I mean I could see this being a popular Pokemon-type drink for kids. I really could, because it's got the energy flavor, like a little bit of taurine
that,
or something.
That rocket acid.
Yeah.
Oh.
From the peanut gallery.
I can only imagine what the Bulbasaur one tastes like. What the fuck would the Snorlax one taste like? Fucking Valium put you to sleep?
It just says...
Here you go, kids.
It says on the sides, it's
Xanax.
It says, now with 10 times the Cosby.
Cosby me up.
That's terrible. I said that in public, and
you got some looks.
No, it was family. I just said Cosby me up, and they're like, okay, and then they made my drink stronger. Oh, I'm not condoning his behavior.
God, no. But no, this is pretty legit. Actually, if anything... Oh,
the burps are coming.
If anything, I really dig the can. I dig the branding on this.
You can keep the can.
All right, cool. Actually, I'm going to have Blair turn this into a dice cup.
You could. You saw off the top and run, I guess, file down the edges or whatever.
Now, why did they not call... Okay, it said Ocean Bomb is the name of the flavor.
Thunderbolt?
What? Yeah, Thundershock or some shit like that.
Well, Ocean Bomb is the name of the company.
Oh!
That's the company making it.
Yeah, so maybe it does have a different name.
A lot more.
But it is
a potential. Geez, Morty.
you know this one's real, though, because it's not like a Chinese knockoff. This must be a Japanese drink.
Yeah.
Because it has the Pokemon... It has the seal on the side of it from the Pokemon company.
Overall, this was pretty damn good.
The flavor was nice and subtle.
I
could feel refreshed off of it. It didn't feel like that kind of sugary aftertaste that you usually get with a pop or a soda for you in the States.
Thinner in its, I guess, consistency because it doesn't have the high fructose corn syrup.
You know what? I'm going to have Blair go to TNT
and
pick up the rest of the Pokemon flavors.
They have that, and below that, from a different brand... There's two other Pokemon drinks in those bottles that have the marble that you snap in to make it open.
Cool.
So there's that. And I did see that they had cases of like four of them, and I think it was the price of three. So you might be able to get a case or something.
All right, cool. All right, we will definitely do that. So
we have a goal.
The Pokemon drinks, we are indeed going to Catch them
that's,
all.
I was going to say, that's approval from me. It tastes, final word, it tastes like apple cider if you removed all the apple taste.
Apple cider mixed with an energy drink.
Yeah.
Right, well, I'll get you more pumpkin. I'll ram it right up your fucking ass. Would you like it whole or diced?
The Friends of Ringo Ishikawa may look like a classic side-scrolling beat-em-up, but under that visage is a deep and existential open-world game that gives you highs and lows, and still has you punching people in the face. You are thrust into your first fight the moment you hit the start button, scrambling to figure out the controls as your opponent knocks you around a bit. You're part of a gang brawl, and you and your pals are beating the snot out of your rival gangs, right up until you get put in your place by a bigger and badder rival. Fast forward 1 year, and Ringo and his friends are 30 days away from high school graduation, and Ringo's grades are in the dump. His sensei tells him he still has the chance to get his act together, so you're given a glimmer of the hope of redemption from your delinquent lifestyle. From there, it's almost entirely up to you where to go, what to do, who you talk to, and who you punch in the throat as each day goes by. You can choose to focus on your grades by attending school each day and spending time on your homework, or you can spend your time wandering the streets, fists flailing and likely getting beaten to a pulp. It might be easier for players to get the hang of the game systems if there was a little more guidance given early on. I like open-world titles, but I do like to be at least pointed in the direction I'm supposed to go, so I can then choose to ignore that main quest for at least 20 hours. Ringo simply has too many options to spend his time on when you first set out, but that's partly what gives this game its genuine feeling of being overwhelmed. It's overwhelming on purpose. Ringo is overwhelmed by his situation, being pressured to up his failing grades, keeping himself in shape, working a part-time job, and kicking the teeth out of whoever's mouth he pleases takes up a lot of time. And time is not your friend here. Everything you do eats up time, and with just 30 days to make something of yourself, you will feel rushed to cram in everything you can into every day. You're probably going to fail, and that feeling gets stronger as you play, but it invests you in the characters. You want to see Ringo and his company succeed, in whatever exploits you've decided to focus on, but it's likely you won't reach your goals. It might lead to a disappointing ending, but since a playthrough is fairly short, you will have another chance to try something a little different the next time. Graphically, The Friends of Ringo Ishikawa is quite beautiful for a pixel art game. The characters are distinguishable and recognizable, and the backgrounds are gorgeous and very well detailed. When you see an object, you know exactly what it's supposed to be. There's a video rental shop that shows a Bruce Lee poster on the outside, and you know exactly what it is the moment you spot it. The Friends of Ringo Ishikawa surprised me, and in a good way. At first, I was expecting a simple beat-em-up. Then I saw some RPG elements pop up, and I was expecting maybe some stats I could level up to be a stronger fighter, but nothing too deep. What I got was a nuanced and complex game with a thousand things to do and an ever-creeping feeling of doom. It's a unique experience that I really do have to recommend, but it's hard to describe who to recommend it to, as it has a little something for every variety of player. If you're feeling a little curious, give this game a try, and I guarantee you will find something you'll enjoy. The Friends of Ringo Ishikawa is available on PC and Nintendo Switch. Until the next review, I'm Mr. Tristopher for ThisWeekInGeek.net.
And that just about does it for the show this week. It's more of a truncated, smaller show because due to weather and health, everything's sort of been left to me, which is perfectly fine, but I had already just done a Turtle Treasure show, so it was sort of just gathering all the news stories that we were going to be talking about and putting in some of the reviews that we had finished and an interview or so. So that's going to be it this week. I know this weekend we are supposedly, as long as, you know, knock on wood, gathering together to record some more episodes for the Cambridge Chronicles Shadowrun game that we're doing. And we're going to try to get as well, you know, back together, all of us, now that I think everybody's health is back in order, for another Twig show. And we're going to be moving forward with that. And we're probably, hopefully, again, knock on wood, going to be doing the prototype that we've been talking about for a while. It's time to get it all done. It's just, it's been a weird winter so far. So that's going to do it this week. You know, stay safe out there. Hopefully no crazy, you know, fish rainstorm, snowstorm, whatever you want to call it, comes and kills you. Just, you know, drive safe, stay warm, and we'll talk to you next time, people.
Well, that's our show. All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info on the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
And if I'm a monkey, then I might as well act like a monkey, huh?
What on earth are you doing?
Don't ask me. I'm a fucking monkey.